few years I've been involved in the study of vortices for various models in gauge field theories. And in fact, I think I've bored many of you during the past year talking about this stuff. So today I'm going to give only really PDE talk, in fact, for a very simple looking PDE, because what it has come up from the study of vortices in a self-dual setting is that due to an approach of Taubes in the early 80s, it is in fact possible to reduce the study of vortices, say, for two-dimensional, in a two-dimensional situation, it is possible to reduce the study of vortices to actually some elliptic PDEs of Liouville type, meaning that they involve exponential nonlinearities, and also involving some Dirac measure supported at the vortex point. I remind you that according to Peter Stock, the vortex set is the set where the ordering parameter vanishes. I'm focusing on a two-dimensional situation, so this set is given by points, the vortex points. So my elliptic PDEs would involve Dirac measures supported at those points as singular sources. In fact, the PDEs that one has to deal with usually come on system forms, and they depend on many. Now, the wealth of PDEs arising in this context. And but actually, what we've noticed that most of the analytical aspects of these PDEs can be captured by a very simple-looking model, which I now will describe to you. And so today I want to discuss some progress that we've made in studying this simple-looking equation. So the equation is the following one. It's an elliptic one, as I promised. So it's minus Laplacian of u equal to weight function k e to the u minus 4 pi sum of Dirac measures at the points pj, j running from 1 into n. And I will consider this equation, u is a scalar here, and I'll consider this equation in some set m, and I will be more specific about m in a moment, so let me call this 1. And as I said, the point p1, pn, those are the vortex points, are points in m not necessarily distinct. Are the vortex points, so let me just write it, vortex points. And the way to see it is that you have seen during the past few days in the previous talks that usually in this context you have a complex valued ordering parameter phi, and the relationship now, you know, loosely speaking, the relationship between the ordering parameter phi and this variable u here is that e to the u is equal to mod phi squared. And therefore, you see the presence of the Dirac measure into the equation. This also justifies the factor of 4 pi here that I put, because that would imply a log singularity for u at pj, and therefore e to the u would have to vanish there. So that's right there. So indeed, if that's the relationship between the two, you would have that e to the u will vanish at pj, and in fact near pj e to the u looks like, say, I will use complex notation here, it's just more convenient. So my variable will be z, a complex notation, so z minus pj squared, okay? Just, and that's also to justify the factor. So this for z that approaches pj. I mean big O, let's say, because might be some complex. Okay, m is dimension 2, I will tell in a moment. So k is a weight function, so let me just take, you know, a few assumptions out of the way. So it's, let's say, C1, you do read much less, and it's bounded above and below, away from zero, so that will be always my assumption. And we will be interested, put some oil. Okay. You know. Okay. And M, as I said, I must specify, so I will be interested in two situations. One is the case where M is R2, and there you will be looking clearly to planar vortices. And in this case, then you have to equip your problem with some boundary condition and a good one from the application, from the point of view of application, is to require that the integral over R2 of k e to the u is finite, and this would just correspond to a finite energy. I mean, if you then trace back to your vortex problem, this will guarantee indeed that the vortex is a finite energy vortex, as it should be. Okay? The other situation that's actually more interesting situation that you'll be interested on is the case where M is a surface, a two-surface, compact. And for simplicity, although it's not really needed, I shall take the situation where it has no boundary. And as you see now, if you just integrate out the equation, in this case, you have that the energy, you have a nice quantization property for the energy. If you agree with me, if you bear with me, that this is actually, at the end, will measure the energy of the vortex. So the energy, it is quantized, because you'll have that k e to the u is equal to 4 pi n. Just integrate out. You have no boundary here. And so you see that the energy will be quantized and labeled by n, which is the vortex number. Or if you wish, the degree, what was usually referred to as the degree of in a Dirichlet type setting for the Ginzburg-Landau model that had been discussed the day before. So this is the vortex number, is a topological invariant. I don't have to convince you much about it because, indeed, as I said, can be reformulated as a degree. And in fact, N will topologically classify the solution. Solution will be classified from the topological point of view according to the vortex number N. And in fact, once that you observe that, I just point out to you that sometimes the equation the equation that I wrote there can be rewritten in a mean field type version. So this you might have seen in some of the work that has been done concerning self-dual vortices, that the equation 1 is equivalent actually to, I write it out of curiosity, to the following one. It's 4 pi n e to the u integral of, sorry, I'm forgetting the k, e to the u over m minus 4 pi sum delta pj. See, I just, you know, this, since this is 4 pi, so then I just multiply and divide. Yes? Yeah. In this case, yes, yes, has to. It would be a log type, you see? You will see. Yeah, it has to go to minus infinity. Okay. So this is another way to writing. Usually this one will be a parameter and there is some work. And they are referred to as the mean fields equation, blah, blah, blah. Huh? So I just point it out to you in case, just to make the connection. Also, in the compact setting, let me say that a particularly interesting situation is the case in which M is the flat two torus. And this is because, you know, then it means that you are looking for periodic vortices. And this is what, at least as far as superconductivity is concerned, is what was predicted by Abrikosov. So, so to speak, I mean, solving equation of this type on the torus would mean that your model is going to support the so-called Abrikosov mixed states. So those are the ones, I mean, really would be really interested in solving the problem on the flat two torus. And you'll see that, in fact, the torus for this problem is a critical type situation. That is somewhat the goal of my talk. Okay, so now just to give you a flavor on the type of features of this equation, let me just focus, discuss a little bit, very briefly, very simple situation, but very instructive. And is that the situation in which M is just R2, where for simplicity, I will just have all points coincide with the origin. And also, let us take K identically 1. Okay? So really what I'm considering is the singular elliptic equation in R2, Liouville equation in R2, given as follows, which I should equip with the condition that the integral of E to the U is finite. Okay? As a matter of fact, so this one I will call 2. And as a matter of fact, all solutions for this problem have been characterized. And in order to do that, let me remind you that, and that's why I put Liouville type equation in the title of my talk, because actually Liouville was able to give a formula or a form for solution of this equation. This is a local problem. So if you have a solution of a problem like this in a domain D of R2, which in fact I will identify with a complex plane, then each solution of this problem, so this one I will call star, each solution of star must take the form, this is a Liouville result. Must take the form, complex notation as I say, U of Z equal to log 8 F prime of Z squared mod 1 plus F of Z square, where F is meromorphic and locally univalent in D. Okay, that's Liouville result. Unfortunately, I have no time to comment on why you would guess the formula like that. But in any event, if you want to classify the solution for this problem, then you might try to take advantage of this formula. And what you observe, I mean, this is not a proof, it's just, you know, an idea of how you classify solution for those ones. So what you say, well, you know, I will try to apply the formula in a domain D, which is R2 minus the origin, and then I will try to match, you know, to force my F in such a way that I can meet also the singularity at the origin, okay? Now, the finite energy condition, this, that the E to the U is in L1, actually tell us that F does not have to have a essential singularity near at infinity nor near the origin. Otherwise, neighborhoods of such points will be mapped infinitely many times, and therefore you would fail to meet this condition. So also, that formula is invariant if you replace F with 1 over F. So in a way, you can always assume that the F that you want to plug in there is defined at the origin. Okay? And in other words, so what I'm saying that F must be a polynomial. Okay? Now, must be a polynomial, but now I remember I want to solve this equation. So I want to consider an F which is a polynomial and such that its derivative admits a zero of order n at the origin. That's what will give me the chance of having a delta at the origin. And therefore, my only choices, and that's where the classification results come, is that F of z equal to some a1 z to the n plus 1 plus a2 with a1 and a2 arbitrary complex numbers. Okay? So if you do a little bit of manipulation, what you find is that all solutions of this problem, so if U satisfies that, then U of Z must look like just very simple manipulation I make. So out of by taking that choice of F, which is the only allowed, is must have this form, log of 8 n plus 1 squared, this comes from the derivative, lambda z to the 2n, as I wanted, divided by 1 plus lambda z to the n plus 1 minus b squared. And this is for every lambda positive and for every complex number c. Okay? So those are the two parameters in there. Okay, how do we justify? So let me just comment a little bit on this formula. And then I want to give also credits on who obtained this. So now the free parameter lambda you can easily justify. So free parameter lambda is justified by the dilation invariance of 2. Under the transformation that to any solution u, you associate a new solution u lambda of z defined by u of lambda z plus 2n plus 1 log of lambda. And that's for every lambda positive. So there is a dilation invariance for the equation. And so this is a good point to make, point out to you that because of the dilation invariance, you see this is sort of anticipation of a concentration phenomenon possibly happening for the problem. Dilation, you know, you can concentrate everything to a point. As you can also see from the formula there, if you let lambda go to infinity, I will go back to it again. Okay, so that justifies lambda. The free parameter B is not as easily justified. And in fact, let me point out to you that in case n is equal to 0, that is to say, I have no pointer, that you look just at the regular Liouville equation. There is no Dirac measure in there. Then the problem is translation invariant. Then 2 becomes translation invariant. And therefore, B is justified. Just it takes account of the translation invariance. But that's no longer the case when n is positive. You don't have the translation invariance. In fact, this is a big loss, in a way, in the analysis of these points, as you will see. Also notice that if n is not an integer, if I take just n to be a positive value, of course, now in the application, we need an integer. And in fact, for any integer, that equation has much more structure. But if you just take n to be just a positive number with alpha not an integer, okay, then, I mean, I can make the same, exact same observation, only that now when, so let me just say we replace. This is just for the sake of observation. If instead of n here, I take just a parameter alpha, and I assume that alpha is not, then you see I can just argue in the same way, and I would end up with this formula with an alpha in there. But if alpha is not an integer, this would be a multivalued function. So when alpha is not an integer, then I'm forced to take b equal to 0 in my formula. So I lose that free parameter. Okay, so then you will have that also when alpha is not an integer, all solution of this problem would be the exact formula with b equal to 0. Okay, and this brings to many interesting observations already about this equation. Now, forget all the motivation. Suppose that I've given to you to look at this equation. Okay, so what we have now come to realize is that this equation, so I will call 2 lambda just to emphasize the role of lambda. So what we come to realize is that problem 2 lambda alpha, thank you. So you are paying attention, at least one. Okay. So problem 2 alpha, you see, admits only radial solution provided alpha is non-negative but not an integer. Okay? So, which is a feature that you would not be able to detect just by, looking at the equation. And what is more important is that non-radial solution exists when alpha is equal to n and is an integer. You see, when beta d is equal to different from zero here, which I'm not only allowed when n is an integer, I get this, and those are non-radial about any point. In fact, they have n plus 1 peaks, maximum, okay? Yeah. All solution. This is all solution. If you satisfy, then. Okay? It might be interesting, since you asked, to point out that if I get rid of this condition, there are many more. For instance, a possible choice, or maybe I'll put it here, if, say, e to the u, you don't want it to belong to R2, then you could choose, for instance, f of z equal, say, z minus 1 e to the z, and this will give you a solution with n equal to 1. You can produce any type. But you see the exponential. In order to do that, you have an essential singularity at infinity. Okay? So that is a strong requirement that only allows you to take polynomial type. Okay. So no radial solution exists, and this brings me to, you know, the way of the proof of this result. In fact, this classification result was obtained when n is equal to 0, so no Dirac measure. It was obtained by Chen and Lin, So n equal to 0 was obtained by Chen and Li by actually the moving plane techniques. So what they show is that indeed every solution for this problem is radial, taking advantage of this type of boundary condition. And therefore they study the ODE in order to classify the result. Now you see that once we have to deal with this problem, of course we try to prove, you know, to do a similar approach and wouldn't work. And would work for substantial reason, because there are no radial solutions, okay? And in fact, then we had to go back to this, to the general formula of Liouville, and in this was inspired by a work of Chow and Wong, who reproved Chen and Li result using Liouville formula. So it really was a good inspiration for us, because their approach somehow working around it also allowed to classify the solution in this case. Okay? So when I say we, this was a work that I proved with Prajapat. Also another observation that I want to make is that in fact all solution of problem 2 alpha, maybe I'll bring this back. So the translation invariance I want to keep. Also note, I'll put it here, note that all solutions for problem 2 alpha satisfy the following is that the integral over R2 of the solution actually is not only finite, but can only take one specific value, which is 8 pi 1 plus alpha. Okay? This result you can prove independently. I mean, you can prove it directly without going to the classification result. This was already known, in fact. Of course, if you have the solution in your hands, you just compute the integral and you see. Okay? So that can prove directly, and again, followed by work of Chen and Li. Okay? Okay, it is somewhat, I think, useful to recast all this, because now I want to talk about the concentration phenomena for the regular part of the solution. That's where we see the concentration phenomena. So now if you decompose my solution U as log of Z to the 2n, so I take away the parts that will account for the Dirac measure, plus a regular function V, then what we can recast all this by saying that then V will satisfy minus Laplacian of V equal Z to the 2 alpha e to the V in R2, and the integral Z to the 2 alpha e to the V finite. And in fact, what we know is now as a result is that if V satisfies this, then V can only take the form as log of 8 1 plus alpha squared. I just want it to lambda 1 plus lambda Z to 1 plus alpha minus B squared, and with lambda positive and B in C, with B 0 if alpha is not an integer. So it's in 0 plus infinity minus n. Okay? Also, what I've just pointed out a minute ago is that the integral over R2 of Z to the 2 alpha e to the V is equal to 8 pi 1 plus alpha. Okay? So now that's where my concentration type of observation comes. I'm ready to make my concentration type of observation, because you see here you have solution which depends, I mean, on the parameter lambda and possibly also on another parameter B, let's say. And now if I let, and I have a family of solutions such that this function here has a fixed L1 norm. So if one, you take lambda, go to infinity the way that I wrote it, then it will have, maybe by taking subsequences which are not needed in fact in this case, it will have to converge in a sense of measure to a measure, and this measure actually is a Dirac measure, or sum of Dirac. So what we have is that the other observation that I want to make here is that, say, if lambda goes to plus infinity, and if B is equal to 0, which, by the way, we have to take it if alpha is not an integer, then Z to the 2 alpha e to the V lambda converges weakly in the sense of measure to this, to a Dirac concentrated at the origin. But if B is different from 0, which actually this would, can only happen when alpha is either 0 or an integer, then actually you could have a multi-peak concentration, as this one is going to convert, oh sorry, here I missed the pi, to 8 pi sum of the Dirac at the points QJs, where the QJs are just the, so this is for B different from 0, are the n plus 1 roots of B. So with QJ, I write it this way, to the n plus 1 equals B. Okay, so for n bigger or equal than 1, so J here goes from 1 into n plus 1, so, and notice that for n bigger or equal than 1, then you have multi-peak concentration. Okay, and this is somewhat, you know, not easy to deal with eventually. Okay? Now, let me, so this is what I wanted to, I mean, for the singular Liouville equation, this is what is the sort of important feature to remember. But now let me turn to the same problem there, but over the torus. I said that the torus is an interesting manifold to look at, and you'll see that already we are led to some more difficult questions, in fact, still open questions. So the problem now that I want to consider, I still keep things very simple because there are already difficult in a way. So on the torus, no, how do you say torus? On T2, so we take, for instance, the periodic cell domain, just to be a square, let's say minus 1, 1 cross minus 1, 1, and now you would be looking at this problem here, exactly like before. So it's e to the u minus 4 pi alpha. I'll keep the parameter alpha just for general discussion. Again, I remind you that we are interested in for integer alpha. Dirac, this is in Q, with U doubly periodic. Okay, so again you try to possibly search for solutions and maybe try to know a bit about their structure. Of course, you see, if you try to go back to Liouville formula, now you face a difficulty because you have to match the periodic boundary condition. Now, this is a serious difficulty because, you see, this tells you that you are forced to work with elliptic functions if you want to match periodic boundary condition. But elliptic functions are very rigid. Then you won't be so free to check where the zero of f prime is. Okay? Nonetheless, a physicist, Olesen, they are always much better than us in this business. More courageous. Well, I think they don't know otherwise. I mean, they don't have the nonlinear analysis nonsense. Yeah. No, I think that, I mean, that's the tools they have. I mean, they know very well elliptic functions, as a matter of fact. Certainly much better than I do. So what he did, I mean, he was clever in a sense that say, okay, I mean, elliptic functions are too restrictive, but what I have to do, I can sort of change a bit of this elliptic function choice. I mean, I have more flexibility because I don't want a periodic f, I want a u that is periodic. I mean, once that I plug it in. So this gave him more freedom, and he was able to come up with an explicit solution, the only known in the periodic setting, explicit solution for alpha equal to 1, so one vortex situation, which might have some, the reason why it was able only for n equal to 1 might have some physical meaning. I mean, maybe you cannot construct multi-vortices in the periodic setting. Huh? So that's why I wanted to mention this. Also, the other thing now, since we are nonlinear nonsense, blah, 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 or variational also, let me also point out, so this is as far as explicit solutions are concerned, and you actually have, so let me give a name, I think this should be 3. So 3, I mean, admits a variational formulation, but let me just say, if you rewrite it in terms of the regular part of U, okay, then that problem admits a variational formulation. I mean, you have to get rid of the Dirac measure, otherwise you would have a good space to variationally formulate the problem. So 3, let me just say that. 3 admits, and I'll put it in quoted, variational formulation. In a sense that you will have to go to an equivalent problem, as I did before, for the regular part, and that indeed admits a variational formulation. And this variational formulation is very much linked to the Moser-Trudinger inequality. So actually, it contains exactly the same terms. And what you find is that when alpha is smaller than 2, this variational problem is coercive. So for functional, it turns out is coercive by the Moser-Trudinger essentially inequality. So let me point out to you, alpha smaller than 2, it means that here you're just below 8 pi. And I remind you, that's why I did this discussion, that 8 pi would be the first, alpha equal to 0, the first critical value for which this concentration could occur. Okay? So you are just, so it fits. I mean, you're just below that critical value. Okay, so coercive, minimized, so not interesting situation. But the first critical situation that you meet is for alpha equal to 2. So alpha equal to 2, this presents as the first critical situation, and already we have an open problem. Okay? And here it comes, first open problem. So alpha equal to 2. So I'm here, 8 pi. I'm dealing with a torus in T2. And the open problem is whether, still open, so open problem, this is 4, does it admit a solution? Or not? Okay, now you must be ready also for non-existence results. Okay, so the problem, very simple, but with this 8 pi number here, let me, with the Dirac measure, so the question is, does this problem admit a solution, or we should be ready for non-existence results? And why I'm saying this is because this problem here should be compared with the regular problem, equivalent to a regular problem, regular meaning that I replace the delta with a regular function, say f in LP, okay, on the sphere. This is a well-known assigned Gauss curvature problem. So let me make this comparison because I think it's interesting. So when I finish? Okay. Well, okay, then let me, I'm sorry, I cannot state any, I mean, as usual, this I say all the time when I give a talk, this was supposed to last 5 minutes, and then it winds up, okay, doesn't matter, so, but I think it is interesting because this is open. I mean, really, it might tell you why those problems are delicate and what has been the effort in trying to manage them, because this problem here should be compared as far as analytical difficulties are concerned, with this regular problem on S2, though, namely this one, minus Laplacian of U, equal e to the u minus 8 pi f, where f is a function just in LP. For the moment, let me take m just a general compact manifold with the integral of f1 otherwise this 8 pi wouldn't have any meaning. And on the sphere, okay, on S2, with m equal to S2, this is the Gauss, assigned Gauss curvature problem, which you know has attracted a lot of attention in the past 10, 15 years, and you have non-existent results, as were first pointed out by Kazan and Warren. Warner. But also many interesting existence results were also established. Well, there is a long list of people. Maybe I'll just mention Barry and Coron, and Paul Young. This just to mention the one that had the most significant contribution, which actually, in order to attain these existence results, they had to, from the variational point of view, they had to construct I more syntax critical points. So this is always non-trivial to do. So now what is the observation here is that on note that this problem, so here I am a number five, so the regular problem on the torus is, not trivial, but doesn't present all this mysterious feature. So note that 5 on m equal to 2, C2, is nice. Okay, I won't say trivial, I'll say nice. In the sense that there is always existence. As a matter of fact, you have existence if you replace 8 pi with any lambda bigger than 8 pi, with any lambda. Okay? And this is a non-trivial result that is a consequence. So this one here, always exists for every lambda, bigger or equal than 8 pi. Below 8 pi is trivial the existence. And this one here, this, let me put it a double star, because I want to make a little bit of the topology now entering in these problems, and to see how the Dirac measure has the effect of sort of changing the topology of things, which we haven't understood yet how. So that's the... So I'm finished. Don't get nervous, really. I mean, people that know me, you know, that they should get nervous, but this time is not needed. So I'm really finished. Really finished. So, what I want to say is that this result, followed by a result of Chen and Lin, which were able to compute the Lehrich-Schauder degree of this operator here for any manifold n. So we're able to compute the Lehrich-Schauder degree of this one, put a lambda here. So this one will be number 6 now for 6 with respect to lambda and the Euler characteristic, here the topology coming, of m. Okay? And for the torus, they found that this degree is always 1. And this is not true for the sphere. For the sphere, they found it that when lambda is above 16 pi, for instance, is 0, the topological degree. So, so that is to say that you see that how the topology for an equation of this type, saying that, for the regular problem. This is the regular problem. Okay, so where I have an F with the same assumption as before. Okay, so for the regular problem, they managed to find, let's say now forget lambda and F, e to the u minus F always admits a solution for the torus. So now, you know, I have to rush and then I make a mess. So now so for the regular automaton, now what is the effort pointing to the application that we have in mind is that I try to get to understand how the Dirac measure is affecting the topology of the underlying space M, you see, once that you replace the F with the Dirac, because it's clear that it's like, I mean, for people that are familiar with this problem, it's like putting a hole. I mean, this is in a vague sense to the manifold. That's why it's affecting. It's like, you know, you have some special points that they must come special, so like a hole, a black hole into your. So you see, and this what we haven't yet understood is to, I mean, we're making progress in this direction, is how the delta, the mysterious, I mean, the delta given by the application and the torus, you see, those where problems are arising from, you know, application, those are sort of the, they lead to a very critical problem in the same sense as the sphere. And so what the progress, I mean, project that we have is to understand what this Lehrich-Schauder degree would be when there is a delta and this is a manifold. Most likely the torus should be the most critical case to analyze. Okay, and really if my, I thought that this would last 5 minutes, my talk would start here and I would tell you all the, you know, the little progress that so far we have made. Some are interesting in themselves, all the problems, but I guess, I mean, you have to be satisfied with just the introduction, so to speak.